Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. Here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We're coming to you from Fresno, California, from the Elbow Room. One of the great places to eat here in the city of Fresno. It's back open again in the heart of the San Joaquin Valley. This week, we're pleased to have on Damon Kurtz, who is the vice president of PORAC. Damon, welcome to the show. You haven't been on the show, but thank you so much for being on.
No, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, look, there's been a lot's happened over the last month. And one of the things I wanted to do on the podcast is bring in a real live police officer, someone who's been on the streets, who's done a lot in law enforcement, because there's a lot of unknowns out there now, because there's this movement that was started. You know, what I've said is I think all of us are very frustrated with what's happened to African Americans, you know, all throughout history. And I always have to remind people that it was the Republican Party that was stood up because of the slavery issue. But a lot of us that are Republicans have been now, you know, somehow tarnished with this, you know, crazy thing of being some kind of a racist party, which is bizarre to me because it's really the Democratic Party that started that was the, you know, the Confederacy really at the beginning. So totally nuts. And if you would have told me a month ago that all of a sudden that police officers of all people would be the ones that would be brought into this political infighting over really racial politics. We call it identity politics, where the Democratic Party now is like, well, if you're this, if you're that, if you're this, well, that's going to make up the structure of the Democratic Party, which, look, that's fine. If that's your party, that's what you want to do. That's your ideology. Great. Have at it. You know, it's clearly not the ideology of the Republican Party. Now, of course, I get upset because, of course, we're not, you know, we were the party that got rid of racism in this country. But then you have this group that's an arm of the Democratic Party. You know, everybody likes now the name of the group, BLM, Black Lives Matter. Of course, who's going to argue that Black Lives don't matter? All lives matter in this country. No one knows that more than law enforcement. You guys are out there putting your life on the line to save other people's lives. You do it all the time. But I never thought in all of my time in politics that you would have the Democratic Party create this arm of the Democratic Party called BLM. And I say that with actual proof. Their money flows through Act Blue that goes to all the Democratic candidates. So people who actually think, hey, I'd like to support maybe the fund for the legal expenses for Floyd, you know, who was murdered in Minnesota. All good stuff. You know, people want to do that. They want to help out. Well, they have to understand this money is being used to fund an agenda. It's not being used to help any African Americans. This is now being used to fund an extremist agenda. And you've been brought into this. And out of nowhere, the police have been brought into this. Police and sheriffs and everybody in law enforcement. And I would have laughed if you would have told me a month ago that this would be embraced as a movement in this country of defunding the police. And so I never thought that I'd bring a police officer on to the show, but I need to hear from you, and the audience, I think, really needs to hear from people like yourself that have been law enforcement their whole lives, because you guys are dedicated people. You put your lives on the line, and I wouldn't think I'd have to ever explain this, but I think our audience, you know, really, I think, would want to hear about kind of why did you get into law enforcement. What drove you into it, and you know what was the beginning? You know, I know you're with the Fresno Police Department now. You spent a lot of time all throughout California working with other police departments and representing law enforcement in Sacramento. But take us back to those early stages. You're in the military, and how did you decide to wake up one morning and you want to go in law enforcement?
Yeah, so like any other kid coming out of high school, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. I ended up joining the Navy, went into the Navy diving program and, you know, like hard hat diving. And when I was getting out, I had an uncle who was LAPD for several years, and he was a Los Angeles police officer motor. And I have early memories of his motorcycle in the garage. And, you know, as a young kid and, you know, boy, that was really awesome. But something that
you're like watching Chips or something.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, I grew up watching Chips, all those things, you know, but still not knowing that's what I wanted to do. But when I was getting out of the military, I had this, you know, I don't call it an epiphany, but, you know, that my uncle still loved going to work all the way up to the day that he retired. Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, if I could do that, and I'm a very much an outdoorsy person, I don't want to sit behind a desk. So it just seemed like a natural progression going from the military to there. And then there's, you know, that want to serve your community. You just, that's something that it's in you. And that's how I chose to do it. I went into law enforcement.
And you started first as a sheriff.
Yes.
And sheriff's deputy.
So I started as a sheriff's deputy in Santa Barbara.
Over on the central coast of California, not far from here.
In 1994. And then kind of matriculated further north to San Luis Obispo. And then ended up back in the Valley. And I get a lot of weird looks from leaving there to come here to the Valley. But I'm a Valley native, and I just enjoy it over here. And I think it's a great place to live.
So Fresno, it's the sixth largest city in California. Over 500,000 people. The greater Fresno County is a million people roughly. Mm-hmm. And Fresno can be a very dangerous place. And you know, there's a lot of gang problems here, a lot of drug problems here. And I'm very appreciative of what you do. And, you know, for our listeners that are all over, not only in the Valley, San Joaquin Valley, Fresno's kind of in the middle of the San Joaquin Valley, which is in the heart of California. We have listeners from all over the state and country, mm-hmm. and even other countries. And I think specifically the foreign countries are looking at this going, where on earth did this movement come from? And we'll come back to that. But the city of Fresno is a very dangerous place. There's really bad gangs and drug problems here. And maybe just talk about that, what it's like to put your life on the line and be in that situation. You know, in a city like Fresno, it's not tough. I mean, you talked about being the sheriff's deputy, Central Coast, much smaller, mm-hmm. moving over to here with some pretty serious issues with safety of the officers.
Yeah. So Fresno, I think, is a microcosm of what we're seeing in, you know, the entire nation. We have very much a difference in, you know, the socioeconomic issues here in Fresno. We have, you know, the gangs and the crime that comes with being in a big city. And it can be very dangerous in certain parts of the city, certain times. You know, there's different climates, different things going on. You know, we try to do a good job to be in those communities, to know what's going on, try to get ahead of crime trends. And it's about being partners in the community. It really is. You know, we're not every call is a high risk call, even though that's in the back of your mind. You know, the goal is to help the community. We, you know, our officers truly care about the communities they work in, irregardless of where they are geographically. They care about it. They take pride in keeping those communities safe.
Right, because you have, it's everything from, you know, ensuring that people aren't speeding, you know, mm-hmm. down the road, so that you have safety on the roads, mm-hmm. to drug activity, criminal gang activity. To domestic violence issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all sorts of things that happen. And one of the most basic levels of government that I always say is people expect elected officials, no matter what level, to keep them safe. Mm-hmm. That's really one of the, people will pay taxes as long as those taxes are going to keep them safe.
Absolutely.
And we expect we expect it from you as a police officer, as part of the American public. The constituents that I represent expect it from me to ensure that I'm doing whatever. And, it's, you know, at the federal level, it's a big part of your budget doesn't come from the federal mm-hmm. level. You know, it's mostly driven locally and from the state. But at the end of the day, I've never been in a situation where someone's come up to me and said, boy, you know, this police department, we just got to cut this budget. It's never happened to me in my career.
I think the argument that they're not mutually exclusive. In other words, you don't have to defund the police to focus on mental health. You don't have to defund the police to focus on homelessness. I think you can do both. It's where are your priorities? I think as a nation, not only here in Fresno, but as a nation, we need to decide what we want from our law enforcement. Every time there's a new issue, it's put at the foot of law enforcement to fix, whether it's homelessness, whether it's mental health, gangs, drugs. And over the years, it's been put on us to fix it, and often not enough training and resources to fix that. And keep in mind, we're all human still. And so there's going to be mistakes that made, and, you know, people should be held accountable for those mistakes.
It's got to be tough. It's got to be tough. I mean, you know, you have to put yourself in that mindset of, mm-hmm. You know, and let's just take guns for example. You know, there's a reason why in this country that, you know, we have a Second Amendment. But also we've developed a process by which people get a permit. Everybody needs proper training to handle a gun. Mm-hmm. You've been in the military, so you must be very familiar with this. A lot of training goes into this. And, you know, you have to put yourself in that position. I've never been in that in mm-hmm. a position like this. But when someone's pointing a gun at you or someone else, and you don't know at that moment whether you're going to get shot, it's got to be a tough place to be. And nobody wants to be in that position. And it's, you know, and the people that volunteer mm-hmm. To do the work that you're in, I think that's just got to be a tough place for a human being, like you said, you're all human, and having that, being at that level when someone's pointing a gun at you and things are getting heated, got to be a tough spot.
Yeah, there's something to be said about those individuals that run towards gunfire versus away from it. I don't know why we have it and why those folks in law enforcement are those types. It's natural for us to address those dangers. You know, but this is the importance of, you know, strong scenario-based training, because when you're under stress, you revert back to your training. It becomes a muscle memory issue. And we know that. And, you know, some of the things that are going on right now, I think have really magnified the need for maybe a national standard on training and recruitment. You know, if we're all operating on similar policies and the, you know, the vetting of officers coming in, not only here in California, we tend to be a little more progressive here, but across the nation, if we're all, you know, working from the same rules, maybe we can limit some of the mistakes, and they're going to happen no matter what. You know, I've told people that, you know, although, like you brought it up in the beginning, you know, law enforcement has some things that they've done wrong, and I don't have to be proud of that, but I am still proud of the profession and what we do.
Absolutely.
The greater good that we bring far outweighs what's going on. The reality is you have a higher chance of dying on the operating table or under the care of a physician than you do at the hands of a police officer. But it doesn't really make the news. It's not scintillating, so we don't see that. You know, folks want to see us fail for whatever reason right now. And I say folks, but, you know, I know the general public, that's not true, mm-hmm. but it seems that way because that's what's been sensationalized in the media.
Right. Well, there's not a, like I said earlier, I mean, no one's ever, that sane has ever called my office or mm-hmm. come up to me on the street and said, you got to make sure that you cut that Fresno Police Department.
Right.
Nobody's ever said that. So, mm-hmm. so how does something that's so, you know, there's always going to be bad apples. Everybody's human in mm-hmm. every sector of our society. There's going to be bad people or people that make mistakes at all levels, no matter if you're a police officer or if you're in politics or if you own a restaurant. People are going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And you know, look, I'm all for training. I'm all for doing that. But at the end of the day, you know, those people that get trained like you do in handling weapons and handling very serious, dangerous situations, at the end of the day, I've got my girl sitting over there. They're off camera, but they're here today. You know, look, if it comes between, you know, somebody that's waving a gun around and my young daughters and you're here on the scene, I mean, look, if somebody's waving a gun around, the last thing I want to do is see my family or my friends or somebody get hurt. And you're on that front line, and I know mistakes are going to be happen, you know, are going to happen, and they do. But, you know, it's I'm sure unless you've got some mental issue, no police officer is like trigger happy, ready to just, you know, start mowing down people. I mean, it just yeah. can't possibly be.
By and large, there are very few bad apples in the profession. Very, very few. There are folks that react differently to stress. Some do it better than others. There are mistakes that get made. More likely than not, it's a mistake. And maybe that mistake costs them their job. Maybe that mistake means, hey, this isn't a profession for you. We have a process. You know, it takes, you know, roughly about a year to become a police officer if you go through the academy and the training program. And maybe that's something we talk about. Is that long enough? I don't know. You know, life experiences is what helps you be a good police officer. You need, bottom line, you have to have empathy. But
I think that's part of it. I don't think like what you said, you know, you wanted to serve, you know, you obviously mm-hmm. were in the military, you got out, you like being outdoors,
right.
All those things you said that takes a special person. Not everybody's going to be cut out to go be a first responder, whether it's police or fire or in the healthcare sector. It takes different people.
Yeah. From the academy to the training program, we probably, you know, it's probably 50% don't make it. And then, and then just because you
drop out.
Yeah. Or they don't make it through the training program. They get failed, either through the, you know, academic testing or through the practical side of things. This job's not for everybody. And sometimes it's hard for folks to accept that.
And the year is pretty standard for across the nation.
Yeah. So I can't say that across the nation, but here in California, you have about a 6-month academy and then you have a minimum of a training program that's typically about 16 weeks long. Mm-hmm. So it takes close to a year, 9 months to a year to become a police officer. And really that's just to where we feel that you can go out there on your own and not hurt yourself or somebody else. And then your learning continues. It never stops. Laws change, trends change. And so you have to change with the times.
And I know before this, before the COVID and the time of the virus here, when the economy was booming, we had very low unemployment. I know it was an issue just then to try to convince people to go into law enforcement. I know it was tough. I know there was a lot of positions that weren't being filled throughout California, just in the recruitment. I can't imagine now the struggles that you guys are going to have to try to get people into law enforcement with all of these, what you see on the mainstream news every day.
Well, when you're being made out to be the enemy, it's difficult. And it's difficult to look somebody in the face and say, no, yeah, come do this job.
Right.
I mean, the job itself is still incredibly rewarding. When you help somebody, you've helped them or saved their life. It's a feeling that it's hard to describe. It's not like TV. And I think that's part of the problem is as a nation, and I've said this before, we tend to glamorize the hard-nosed cop on all our TV shows and the movies, but we don't really glamorize, say, Andy Griffith. And the reality is we have to be a little bit of both. But folks need to decide what they want from their law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Do they want us to be the guy that's going to run to the gunfire, or do they want us to be the social worker? We have to be both, but they can't be one or the other. We have to be both. We have to have the ability to switch from being there just to talk to you to the next minute having to spring into action. That's the nature of the job, and it happens quite often.
And one of the things you bring up the aspect of being a social worker, that's a really key point. Here in California, we're being overrun by homelessness. It's largely been driven because of laws that have passed here in California that have let criminals out onto the street, people that just, for the most part, they just couldn't get off of drugs. And do they have mental health issues? Absolutely. They have mental health issues today. It was brought on by their own, it's self-induced, right? Drugs over time do this. But for our listeners, because this homeless problem does not exist like it does across the country and around the world, like it does here in California. Mm-hmm. It's got to be kind of a tough issue because you'll go into these camps with hundreds of people looking for, someone that you're trying to find that committed a crime. It's got to be a tough environment just to walk in there knowing that most of those people aren't dangerous, but they're very mentally unstable.
Yeah. So the majority of our calls have some component of mental health. And a lot of that's combination of mental health and drug abuse or drug problems that sometimes induce those mental health states. I can tell you what I don't believe we're doing it right in California from a law enforcement perspective. I have a unique experience. I was a deputy for a while. I was a bailiff in court. There were things called drug court. And I got to see people, even people I knew who came into custody who were really not themselves. They weren't the person I knew because they were strung out on drugs. And they were doing drug court to get out earlier, right? And the completion of this drug court and this process, I saw the person come back because they were sober and clean long enough. And I felt like when they got out, they had an opportunity to stay clean. Doesn't mean they will, but they had the opportunity. Right now, there's this idea that, well, we'll just give everybody treatment and everything will be great. Well, if they don't want treatment, and typically they don't when they're in the throes of addiction, how are we ever going to break that cycle? Right. We have to figure out a way to break that. And a lot of times custody is where that happens. It doesn't mean they're bad people, how do we break that cycle? We're not doing that right now. It's really more economically driven than anything else. People don't realize that. It's not about, I feel bad for them because they want this. We just don't want to spend the money to put them into these programs or put them in custody.
And the discussion now has become, we're not having the discussion that we should be having in the state of California. And our weather basically encourages more people to come out, right? Because if you're going to live on the street and then they develop their own cultures, their own societies, the drugs flow in through those, through the homeless there. The ones that I've interacted with, it just seems like most of them have just, they're mostly just burnt out. But the challenge is that instead of having the discussion, okay, do we need the hardened criminals, you know, who have committed murder, who have, you know, who have robbed, who have, you know, done domestic violence, things that are, you know, very violent people. Do you need to throw, like, the person that you talked about, which I have those examples too, people you knew, you know, they're good people, but they've, the drugs have messed them up. So there was probably an argument to have. Do you want to put those people along with the violent people? Maybe not. That was a good discussion that we should have had. But instead, what the left moved to do is say, no. Drugs, no big deal. If you're drugs, we're just gonna let you out. We're gonna let you out, and we're not gonna put you in jail at all.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got this. Now we've got these examples. You know, we have people getting killed by people that are getting out of jail, getting on drugs. And
right. So, what's going on here in California? You have everybody's focused on COVID. You know, rightly so. But while everybody's focused on that, we have a no bail system, and they're looking at closing down two prisons.
Right.
The continuing to push people out on the street, they're going to commit more crimes. There's got to be a mechanism for us to be able to protect the public, and they keep taking those tools away.
Well, and to me, there's got to be a way. There's got to be something. We can't just have people out on the street like this, the homeless just out there like this. It's got to be something where, and I can understand, we don't want to put them and spend, you know, a whole bunch of money incarcerating them with violent criminals. But they got to be put somewhere. They can't just be put on the street, and you know that's not going to work. And it makes your job, you know, even harder.
Yeah, there's got to be a process to where we can change behavior. And I don't know that you can just do it by saying, "Hey, we're going to give you treatment while you're in the throes of addiction." There's got to be a way.
You've got to be brought into custody.
You got to break that cycle
and try to sober up. Really, right? I mean, that's kind of the old school. Yeah. Got to sober them up before you can let them out.
Yeah, but so you know, I don't know what the answers are. I don't think we're going in the right direction. You know, I made a comment the other day that we're all about restorative justice right now, unless you're a police officer. Everyone gets second chances unless you're a police officer. And that's kind of that's where we're living right now. And I don't know how we're going to refill our ranks after this. I think it's going to be very difficult.
I'm very concerned too. And that's why I wanted you to come on the show, just to talk about what it's like in the daily life of a police officer. And mm-hmm. so in kind of closing this up, this defund the police movement, you know, obviously we're going to oppose that at the federal level. But at the state level here in California, it's pretty serious movement. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe talk about a few of the things? You just talked about prisons, a couple of prisons that they're mm-hmm. talking about closing. What else are they talking about doing here in the state of California over the course that just kind of popped up over the course of the last month here?
You know, so the defund the police is a strong voice right now.
So there are actually people talking about it.
Even here
in the capital, in Sacramento.
In Sacramento, here in Fresno, this defund the police, take the budget and put it somewhere else. And like I said, I don't think it's mutually exclusive and that they need to do it that way, but that's the voice. There's talk of removing police officers from our schools, which I think is incredibly important, not only from having a initial contact with law enforcement when mm-hmm. they're younger, but protecting our children.
Last time I checked, didn't we have the issue that everybody was concerned about guns and gun violence and mm-hmm. drugs on school and weapons in school? And that was part of the reason to have the police officers mm-hmm. on campus was specifically for that. That was just like a few years ago. There was like the demand on you guys, you got to put somebody at the schools.
But now we've been demonized to the point that folks are demanding for law enforcement to be removed. There's a committee here in the state of California for the reform of the penal code to eliminate prison sentences. You know, folks don't know about that. That's going on right now. And when you listen to the people on that committee, you'd think they've never been a victim of a crime.
I don't think people are going to believe what you're saying right now.
Yeah.
I just don't. I mean,
I think that
I know you're telling the truth, but I just don't believe that. I don't think our listeners and our audience are going to believe what you're,
you know, it's in our effort to create utopia. We're going to create dystopia. This is what I believe.
Yeah.
And I think we're heading there faster than I ever thought. I don't recognize the country I live in right now with some of the things going on in, around the nation. I mean, particularly in Seattle and other places. It's quite shocking to me.
Well, Damon Kurtz, thank you so much for what you do. I know it's not an easy job. You've got a very difficult job trying to represent all the police officers in the state of California. But we're with you. And hopefully the country I think once we get kind of this message out, hopefully people will understand what you guys have to go through. And that this defund the police movement should just be, this should be, nobody should even be talking about this. This is an extremist point of view.
Well, my hope is that that silent majority that we know is out there becomes civically involved and pays attention to what's going on and voices their opinion to their electeds and say that this isn't okay. We don't believe that's where most of Americans are, but the ones that are speaking, that's the voice that's being heard right now. And we desperately need common sense to come back.
Well, as I said, I never thought I'd be doing a podcast on defunding the police, but here we are. Thanks a lot, Damon. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
This is Devin Nunes. Thank you to the Elbow Room for having us, and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we've kept our American faith.
Now it's not our first trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we kept our American faith. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.